Chapter 20. As a general thing, the priests lived in cordial and fraternal unity, and were in turn in the habit of giving a grand dinner every Thursday. Several days in advance, preparations were made to collect everything that could please the taste of the guests. The best wines were purchased, the fattest turkeys and chickens, lambs, or sucking pigs were hunted up. The most delicate pastries were brought from the city or made at home at any cost. The rarest and most costly fruits and desserts were ordered. There was a strange competition among these curates who would surpass his neighbors. Several extra hands were engaged some days before to help the ordinary servants to prepare the grand dinner. The second Thursday of May, 1834, was Mr. Perrault's turn, and at 12 o'clock noon, we were 15 priests seated around the table. I must here render homage to the sobriety and perfect moral habits of the Reverend Mr. Perrault. Though he took his social glass of wine, I never saw him drink more than a couple of glasses at the same meal. I wish I could say the same thing for all those who were at his table that day. Never did I see before nor after a table covered with so many tempting and delicate viands. The good curate had surpassed himself. One of the most remarkable features of these dinners was the levity, the absolute want of seriousness and gravity. Not a word was said in my presence there which could indicate that these men had anything else to do in this world but to eat and drink, tell and hear merry stories, laugh and lead a jolly life. Though at first I was pleased with all I saw, heard, and tasted, though I heartily laughed with the rest of the guests at their spicy stories about their fair penitents, or at the funny caricatures they drew of each other, I felt by turns uneasy. Now and then the lessons of priestly life received from the lips of my venerable and dear Mr. Leprechaun were knocking hard at the door of my conscience. Some words of the Holy Scriptures were also making a strange noise in my soul. My own common sense was telling me that this was not quite the way Christ taught his disciples to live. I made a great effort to stifle those troublesome voices. Sometimes I succeeded, and then I became cheerful, but a moment after I was overpowered by them, and I felt chilled, as if I had perceived on the walls of the festive room the finger of my angry God writing, "Meanie, meanie, tekel, upharsin." Then all my cheerfulness vanished, and in spite of all my efforts to look happy, the Reverend Mr. Paquet, curate of St. Gervas, observed it on my face. That priest was probably the one who most enjoyed everything of that feast. Under the snowy mantle of 65 years, he had kept the warm heart and the jovility of youth. He was loved by all, particularly by the young priests, who were the objects of his constant attentions. He had always been exceedingly kind to me, and I dare say that my most pleasant hours were those passed in his parsonage. Looking at me the very moment when my whole intellectual being was, in spite of myself, under the darkest cloud, he said, "My dear little Father Chenecky, are you falling into the hands of some blue devils when we are all so happy? You were so cheerful half an hour ago. Are you sick? You look as grave and anxious as Jonah. when in the big whale's stomach? Has any of your fair petitioners or penitents left you to go confess to another?" At these funny questions, the dining room was shaken with convulsive laughter. I wished I could join in, but there was no help for it. A moment before, I had been the servant. I had seen the servant girls blush. They had been scandalized by a very improper word from a young priest about one of his young female penitents, a word which he would surely never have uttered had he not drunk too much wine. I answered, "I am much obliged to you for your kind interest. I find myself much honored to be here in your midst, but as the brightest days are not without clouds, so it is with us all sometimes. I am young and without experience. I have not yet learned to look at certain things in their proper light. When older, I hope I shall be wiser and not make a fool of myself as I do today." "Ta, ta, ta," said old Mr. Paquette. "This is not the hour of dark clouds and blue devils. Be cheerful, as it behooves your age. There will be hours enough in the rest of your life for sadness and somber thoughts." And appealing to all, he asked, "Is not this correct, gentlemen?" "Yes, yes," unanimously rejoined all the guests. "Now," said the old priest, "you see that the verdict of the jury is unanimously in my favor and against you. Tell me the reason for your grief, and I pledge myself to console you and make you happy as you were at the beginning of the dinner. I would rather that you continue to enjoy this pleasant hour without noticing me," I answered. "Please excuse me if I do not trouble you with the causes of my personal folly." "Well, well," said Mr. Paquette, "I see it. The cause of your trouble is that we have not yet drank together a single glass of sherry. Fill your glass with that wine, and it will surely drown the blue devil which I see at its bottom." "With pleasure," I said. "I feel much honored to drink with you." And I put some drops of wine into my glass. Oh, what do I see you doing there? Only a few drops in your glass? This will not even wet the cloven feet of the blue devil which is tormenting you. It requires a full glass, an overflowing glass, to drown and finish him. Fill then your glass with that precious wine, the best I have ever tasted in my whole life." "But I cannot drink more than those few drops," I said. "Why not?" he replied. "Because 8 days before her death, my mother wrote me a letter requesting me to promise her that I would never drink more than 2 glasses of wine at the same meal. I gave her that promise in my answer, and the very day she got my pledge, she left this world to convey it, written on her heart, into heaven to the feet of her God." "Keep that sacred pledge," answered the old curate, "but tell me, why you are so sad when we are so happy?" "Yes, yes," said all the priests. "You know that we deeply feel for you. Please tell us the reason of this sadness." I then answered, "It would be better for me to keep my own secret, for I know I will make a fool of myself here, but as you are unanimous in your request, you will have them. You well know that I have been prevented till this day from attending any of your grand dinners. Twice I had to go to Quebec. Sometimes I was not well enough to be present. Several times I was called to visit some dying person, and at other times the weather or the roads were too bad to travel. This then is the first grand dinner attended by you all, which I have the honor of attending. But before going any further, I must tell you that during the 8 months it has been my privilege to sit at Reverend Mr. Peraz's table. I have never seen such things in this parsonage as have just taken place. Sobriety, moderation, truly evangelical temperance in drink and food were the invariable rule. Never a word was said which could make our poor servant girls or the angels of God blush. Would to God that I had not been here today, for I tell you honestly that I am scandalized by the Epicurean table which is before us, and the incredible number of bottles of most costly wines emptied at this dinner. However, I hope I am mistaken in my appreciation of what I have seen and heard. I hope you are all right and I am wrong. I am the youngest of you all. It is not my business to teach you, but it is my duty to be taught by you. Oh, my dear Chiniki, replied the old curate, you hold the stick by the wrong end. Are we not the children of God? Yes, sir, I answered, we are the children of God. Now does not a loving father give what he considers the best part of his goods to his beloved children? Yes, sir, I replied. Is it not that loving father pleased when he sees his beloved children eat and drink the good things he has prepared for them? Yes, sir, was my answer. Then rejoined the logical priest, the more we, the beloved children of God, eat of these delicate viands and drink of those precious wines which our heavenly Father puts into our hands, the more he is pleased with us, the more we, the most beloved ones of God, are merry and cheerful, the more he is himself pleased and rejoiced in his heavenly kingdom. But if God our Father is so pleased with us, why are you so sad? This masterpiece of argumentation was received by all, except Mr. Peraz, with convulsive cries of approbation and repeated, bravo, bravo. I was too cowardly to say what I felt. I tried to conceal my increased sadness under the forced smile of my lips. It was then 1:30 p.m. At 2:00, the whole party went to the church, where after kneeling for 1/4 hour before their wafer God, they fell on their knees to the feet of each other to confess their sins and get their pardon in the absolution of their confessors. At 3 p.m. they were all gone, and I remained alone with my venerable old curate, Peraz. After a few moments of silence, I said to him, my dear Mr. Peraz, I have no words to express to you my regret for what I have said at your table. I beg your pardon for every word of that unfortunate and unbecoming conversation into which I was dragged in spite of myself, when I requested Mr. Perquet to tell me in what I might be wrong. I had not the least idea that we would hear from the lips of one of our veterans in the priesthood the name of God connected with such deplorable and awful impieties. Mr. Peraz answered me, far from being displeased with what I heard from you at this dinner, I must tell you that you have gained much in my esteem by it. I am myself ashamed of that dinner. We priests are the victims, like the rest of the world, of the fashions, vanities, pride, and lust of that world against which we are sent to preach. The expenditure we make of these dinners is surely a crime in the face of the misery of the people by whom we are surrounded. This is the last dinner I give with such foolish extravagance. The brave words you have uttered have done me good. They will do them good also. They were not so intoxicated as not to remember what you have said. Then, pressing my hand in his, he said, thank you, my good little Father Chiniki, for the short but excellent sermon. It will not be lost. You have drawn my tears when you have shown us your saintly mother going to the feet of God in heaven with your sacred promise written in her heart. Oh, you must have had a good mother. I knew her when she was very young. She was then already a very remarkable girl for her wisdom and the dignity of her manners. Then he left me alone in the parlor and went to visit a sick man in one of the neighboring houses. When alone, I fell on my knees to pray and weep. My soul was filled with emotions impossible to express. I could not contain myself. I wept over my own sins, for I did not find myself much better than the rest, though I had not eaten or drunk quite so much as several of them. I wept over my friends whom I had seen so weak, for they were my friends. I loved them, and I knew they loved me. I wept over my church, which was served by such poor, sinful priests. Yes, I wept there, when on my knees, in my heart's content, and it did me good. But my God had another trial in store for his poor, unfaithful servant. After my prayer, I had not been 10 minutes alone sitting in my study when I heard strange cries and a noise as if a murderer were at work. A door had evidently been broken open upstairs, and someone was running downstairs. The cries of "murderer, murderer" reached my ears, and the cries of "Oh my God, where is Mr. Peraz?" filled the air. I quickly ran to the parlor to see what was the matter, and there I found myself face to face with a woman absolutely naked. Her long black hair was flowing on her shoulders. Her face was pale as death, her eyes fixed in their sockets. She stretched her hands toward me with a horrible shriek, and before I could move a step, she seized my two arms with her hands. My bones were cracking under her grasp, and my flesh was torn by her nails. I tried to escape, but it was impossible. I cried for help, but the living specter cried still louder. "You have nothing to fear. Be quiet. I am sent by God Almighty and the Blessed Virgin Mary to give you a message. The priests whom I have known, without a single exception, are a band of vipers. They destroy their female penitents through auricular confession. They have destroyed me and killed my female child. Do not follow their example." Then she began to sing with a beautiful voice, to a most touching tune, a kind of poem she had composed, which I secretly got afterwards from one of her servant maids, the translation of which is as follows: "Satan's priests have defiled my heart, damned my soul, murdered my child. O my child, my darling child, from thy place in heaven dost thou see thy guilty mother's tears? Canst thou come and press me in thine arms, my child, my darling child? Will never thy smiling face console me?" When she was saying these words, big tears were rolling down her pale cheeks, and her sad voice could have melted a heart of stone. I was petrified in the presence of that living phantom. I could not dare to touch her in any way with my hands. I felt horrified and paralyzed at the sight of that pale, cadaverous, naked specter. When the poor servant girl tried in vain to drag her away from me, she struck her with terror by crying, "If you touch me, I will instantly strangle you. Where is Mr. Peraz? Where is Miss Peraz and the other servants?" "For God's sake, call them," I cried out to the servant girl, who was trembling and beside herself. "Miss Peraz is running to the church after the curate," she answered, "and I do not know where the other girl is gone." In that instant, Mr. Peraz entered, rushed towards his sister, and said, "Are you not ashamed to present yourself naked before such a gentleman?" And with his strong arms, he tried to force her to give me up. Turning her face toward him with tigress eyes, she cried out, "Wretched brother, "What have you done to with my child? I see her blood on your hands." When she was struggling with her brother, I made a sudden and extreme effort to get out of her grasp, and this time I succeeded. But seeing that she wanted to throw herself again upon me, I jumped through a window which was opened. Quick as lightning, she passed out of the hands of her brother and jumped also through the window to run after me. I promptly fell headlong, with my feet entangled in my long black priestly robe. Providentially, two strong men, attracted by my cries, came to my rescue. They wrapped her in a blanket and brought her back into her upper chambers, where she remained safely locked under the guard of two strong servant maids. The history of that woman is sad indeed. When in her priest's brother's house, when young and of great beauty, she was seduced by her father confessor and became mother of a female child, which she loved with a real mother's heart. She determined to keep it and bring it up. But this did not meet the views of the curate. One night, when the mother was sleeping, the child had been taken away from her. The awakening of the unfortunate mother was terrible. When she understood that she could never see her child any more, she filled the parsonage with her cries and lamentations, and at first refused to take any food in order that she might die. But she soon became a maniac. Mr. Perez, too much attached to his sister to send her to a lunatic asylum, resolved to keep her in his own parsonage, which was very large. A room in its upper part had been fixed in such a way that her cries could not be heard, and where she would have all the comfort possible in her sad circumstances. Two servant maids were engaged to take care of her. All this was so well arranged that I had been 8 months in that parsonage without even suspecting that there was such an unfortunate being under the same roof with me. It appears that occasionally, for many days, her mind was perfectly lucid. Then she passed her time in praying and singing the poem which she had composed herself, and which she sang while holding me in her grasp. In her best moments, she had fostered an invincible hatred of the priest whom she had known. Hearing her attendants often speak of me, she had several times expressed the desire to see me, which, of course, had been denied her. Before she had broken her door and escaped from the hands of her keeper, she had passed several days in saying that she had received from God a message for me, which she would deliver, even if she had to pass on the dead bodies of all in the house. Unfortunate victim of auricular confession, how many others could sing the sad words of that song? Satan's priests have defiled my heart, damned my soul, and murdered my child.